Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Rebecca Green. Tonight's program will examine Indiana's public defender system, and I'm joined by four individuals to help us do that. The panelists this evening are Allen County Superior Court Judge Fran Gall, Allen County Chief Deputy Prosecutor Michael McAlexander, Larry Landis, the Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, and David Carroll, the Executive Director of the Sixth Amendment Center. I'd like to begin tonight's discussion with a question for David. Mr. Carroll, could you explain to our listeners on what we base the public defender system?
Certainly. So anyone who's too poor to afford a lawyer and is facing a possible loss of liberty at the hands of the criminal justice or juvenile delinquency system is under our Constitution required to have effective assistance of counsel at every critical stage of those proceedings. Now, I think where a lot of people have a misconception is they think this right starts in 1963 with the Gideon versus Wainwright decision. But the right to counsel goes to the very core of who we are as Americans. What most people don't realize is at the start of our country, that the English system specifically prevented lawyers from being in courtrooms. And whereas most of the Europeans that came to our country were those that were subject to religious persecution, they were not going to stand for that. And so the start of having lawyers defending people goes even before the founding of our country here. In fact, when the Bill of Rights was created, the people who drafted the Constitution was not going to allow the government to take over someone's liberty without the process being fair. It fits in with all the other anti-tyranny portions of the Bill of Rights. And so even before the Constitution was adopted, the federal system required attorneys for anyone facing a capital case. And of course, back then, almost everything was a capital case, horse thievery and things like that. And so where almost every state beyond the original colonies is cut up out of federal territories, the right to counsel really starts even before statehood for most states, and certainly that's the case in Indiana. And so I think what people don't realize is when Gideon versus Wainwright came around, the vast majority of states were already providing counsel to the poor. It was really just those states that come out of the Spanish and French heritage as opposed to the English heritage across most of the country. And so I think when people think of the right to counsel, they mistakenly sometimes think of it as just another liberal civil rights decision of the Warren Court, when in fact this is the core of who we are, an anti-tyranny versus individual liberty country.
Thank you. Your Honor, does Indiana have similar requirements in its constitution?
Actually, we do. I mean, in our Bill of Rights, Article 1, Section 13 requires that anybody charged with a criminal offense has the right to be heard by himself and his counsel, therefore implying that they have the right to have counsel appointed if they're not able to hire their own attorney. So, yes.
To you, gentlemen, does the system in Indiana clear up some of the practical applications of the constitutional requirement? Is it easier to do here or not?
Well, it's never easy to do because it costs money to do, and it takes political will to do. And because Indiana throws that responsibility on the backs of counties, that means it's county officials that have to fund it. And so if you look at a state like Indiana where we have a property tax cap, the revenue sources are very limited. So when you go for money for public defenders, you're competing against much higher priorities of elected county officials. They've got to fund police and fire and police and fire pensions. They've got to take care of the roads. So when you're trying to compete with those funding needs for money for providing lawyers for people accused of crimes, it's difficult to persuade local funders that this should be a high priority.
If you're just joining us for WBOI Presents, WBOI News Director Rebecca Green is leading a panel discussion looking at Indiana's public defender system. The panelists are Allen County Superior Court Judge Fran Gall, Allen County Chief Deputy Prosecutor Michael McAlexander, Larry Landis, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, and David Carroll, Executive Director of the Sixth Amendment Center. The next voice you'll hear is Allen County Chief Deputy Prosecutor Michael McAlexander.
To the public, they recognize police departments go with the appropriate entity, but most of the criminal justice system is paid for at the county level. And frequently, we've all heard county officials bemoan the fact that 72% or 75% of their budget goes to criminal justice, which includes the jail, the Allen County Police Department, prosecutors, public defenders, and the courts, as well as a juvenile center. So that's a lot of money every year.
Judge Gall, if you're arrested in Indiana, how does the public defender system work? From a practical standpoint, what happens?
Well, you come into court at your initial hearing and you indicate to the judicial officer that you are unable to hire an attorney, and we appoint counsel for you based on your eligibility. Most of the counties, in Allen County particularly, uses the federal poverty guidelines. So household members, four household members and a certain amount of income and a certain amount of expenditures is looked at to see if you qualify for a public defender. And that's conducted, in our county at least, it's conducted, there's an investigation that's done by an investigator to determine folks, their financial status, and then we appoint counsel for them.
The judge decides if a person needs a public defender? That comes from the investigation, and then the ultimate decision lies with the court.
We do. We appoint public defenders, at least in Allen County. They're appointed pretty much by default, subject to their eligibility. And they have to sign paperwork under oath indicating what their financial status is and if they own property, if they have any kind of real estate or stocks or bonds or any kind of family ability to scrape together money to find an attorney.
From a prosecutor's perspective, what is the benefit to the system if you, as a trial attorney for the state, are facing a competent, qualified, and well-prepared public defense counsel?
Well, I think the public perception is that we want somebody who's 6 months out of law school that we can roll over. The reality is, and I learned this very early in my career because I handled the post-conviction relief cases, and that was primarily a review of people that had been convicted, but to determine whether their due process rights had been followed through and whether they had received effective assistance of counsel. So early on, I discovered that even though you might be able to win at the trial court level, if you didn't do it right or the other side was unarmed in a sense, you were going to have that case sent back to you. So the thing you didn't want to have was having to try the case twice, because by the time you got it back, you would lose witnesses, it would be harder to prosecute it. So it really instilled a sense of, let's do it right the first time. And that requires competent counsel on both sides. And I've had cases where I've had concerns about opposing counsel being kind of out of their league. And it's one of those things that I think for the good of the system, you want a good opposing counsel, even though it may be tough. It may make your job a little tougher on the front end, but it does provide a better sense of justice.
The system works better if it is a fair fight. David?
Our experience in state after state that has addressed this issue is that the prosecutors are often one of the first to come on board for reform, and we appreciate that. I when I interview prosecutors, and indeed when I interviewed prosecutors here, a number of them said to me, we're tired of being the ones trying to preserve the record. We're doing extra work trying to make this happen. And conversely, in many states, the last people arguing against change are the actual public defenders that are currently working in the system because they figured out how to put food on their family's table under the current system. So I appreciate the prosecutor's words. I agree wholeheartedly with them.
I can say, as a judicial officer, having an equal level playing field with very good attorneys on both sides makes it so much easier for the fact finder, whether that fact finder is a judge or whether that fact finder is a jury, that you get competent representation on both sides so that the fact finder's job to find the truth is much easier.
Larry?
No, I totally agree. I think defense lawyers would say the same thing about prosecutors. They'd much rather be paired against a very competent, experienced prosecutor because inexperienced prosecutors don't know how to evaluate the case. They don't see the weaknesses. They might overestimate its value. A good, highly competent prosecutor is going to see their strengths and weaknesses. And most 90% of cases are resolved by plea agreement. So the more that you have experienced, competent lawyers on both sides, They can evaluate the case, and they know whether this is a triable case or not a triable case. And so you avoid those trials that should not be going to trial because there's no triable issue. Mm-hmm. And you get a fair, appropriate resolution when you've got two good, competent adversaries. And it's really important to remember that in an adversary system, the whole system relies upon the quality of those advocates, because the judge only sees what is presented to the judge. Mm-hmm. The judge doesn't go out and evaluate and investigate the case. So if you don't have two good, competent lawyers working the case, you have a much higher chance that either you're going to have an error on, you know, guilty people going free or innocent people being convicted. And I think that's why we want two good advocates. You want to reduce the error rate on both ends.
We've talked around this a little bit, and that it's a county service. The counties pay for it. Are all the counties providing this service, and how is it structured in the state of Indiana?
All counties have the burden of providing and funding indigent defense services, and that was placed upon them in 1854 by a case in the Supreme Court where the case came up as to how are we going to provide and fund this, where the judge said, I'm going to provide counsel. Who pays for it? And the Supreme Court, it went straight up because the county council or the county auditor said they weren't going to pay. So it went up to the Supreme Court to resolve it, and the court said, well, the county pays for the cost of the jail and the cost of prosecution, so I guess it must be on the backs of the counties that they have to pay for it. And we still are operating under that 19th century decision of it's a county responsibility. Half of the states have gone the other way, and now, after Gideon and Argersinger and there's a right to counsel has expanded, they've designed statewide systems to say this is a state responsibility, we need to step up, we need to provide a highly competent and effective system for delivering these services, and find a funding mechanism. Indiana's not done that. So that's part of what this whole effort with the task force is we're looking at the whole system and saying, is there a better way to provide services that you get higher quality and more cost effectiveness?
Mr. Carroll?
Indiana's in the vast minority of states that don't fund 100% of indigent defense services. Earlier I mentioned the Gideon versus Wainwright case. The importance of that case in my mind is that it's not just a Sixth Amendment case, it's a 14th Amendment case. And what the court says is that the state holds the obligation to provide effective representation. Now, they've never been asked whether that state can pass that obligation on to local governments. But what we do know is that if a state chooses to pass that on to local governments, the state is still responsible to ensure that the counties not only can do it, but are in fact doing it. One of the major flaws of Indiana is that there's absolutely no infrastructure to evaluate whether that's happening or not. Mm-hmm. So in your state, there's well over 300 courts which have attorneys providing Sixth Amendment services. And for most of the existence of the Indiana Public Defender Commission, they had one person as a staff. How they expect to evaluate over 300 courts with a single person is beyond me.
Where does the money for this program come from in other states?
It's a straight general fund appropriation from the state that goes through the regular budgeting system. The reason for that is that the counties that are most often in need of indigent defense services are the ones with the least ability to pay for it. So if you think about it, the same indicators of a poor economy, high unemployment, low graduation rates, those things are also usually the same indicators of crime. And so I know when the Sixth Amendment Center went across this state, the team that went to Scott County in particular was saying they just can't ever do this given their low revenue stream, and they have high drug issues and mental health issues and others. You can't really blame the counties. They're trying to do what they can with what they have. They don't have enough to do it. And so it really needs to be from the state.
Mr. Carroll has kind of opened the door for us to talk now about some of these inconsistencies around the state. I know in my own work as a journalist covering a number of smaller communities, you would see a difference in how it was handled, from the competency of the attorneys that were hired to other issues. What have you observed?
Different counties handle it different ways. We have a local board that is in charge of the public defenders, but a lot of counties, and I think some of the smaller counties, the individual judge hires the public defender, or they have a board that hires and does contract type of thing. Most of our public defenders in Allen County are considered county employees, and receive a benefit package similar to the rest of them. But you know, we have 92 counties, and I think my guess is if you really look at all of them, we probably have 92 different systems.
In those 92 counties, does that stereotype of the attorney asleep at the defense table still exist? Is every defendant in Indiana getting fair representation?
You know, I think to a large extent, public defenders get a bad rap because it's perpetuated on TV. There's a lot of problems with the quality of representation, but it's not because they're bad lawyers. I mean, if you look at everything that impairs quality, you'd say, well, lack of independence is important. If you're an at-will employee of the judge, that's going to impair your ability to be a strong advocate or to ask for the resources you need because the judge is telling you, we don't have any money. You know, if you absolutely, really, desperately need it, come and talk to me. So they, you know, they self-censor. They don't go ask for the resources they need. If you get too many cases, I don't care how good you are, you're not going to be as effective as you need to be. So you look at the systemic issues that impair quality, and that's what we're trying to address in this task force. It's not the lawyer's fault. If you got too many cases, you don't have the resources, you have inadequate compensation and you're part-time, you're not going to do as good a job as you would if you had all of those resources. And the other thing, you need some quality oversight. Somebody needs to be assessing quality because we have to remember this is a constitutionally mandated service. It's required to be provided. The consumer, the client, has no choice on who the lawyer is. They can't fire the lawyer. So you don't have any consumer choice, and you've got somebody providing it and nobody overseeing quality. So you know you're going to have, any time you have a system like that, you're guaranteed
to
have some quality.
I will say, Larry, in Allen County, if I get a letter from an individual who's got a public defender and that individual is complaining about their public defender, they don't get to choose the public defender that they get. But when we get complaints about representation, we notify the chief public defender in our county and we demand an investigation. And that public defender investigator goes to the jail or goes makes an appointment with that client and they talk to them and then they report back to the court. And I have removed public defenders because there have been conflicts between the defendant and the attorney that cannot be reconciled. And then we will appoint a new public defender for that individual.
Yeah.
It's common practice for us as well after a trial, if an individual wants to appeal their conviction and their sentence, that we give them a different public defender for purposes of appeal so that the new attorney can look at the trial attorney and see how was that handled at the trial level. So we do to an extent.
I appreciate that in Allen County, but we have 60 counties
exactly
without a chief public
right.
defender. We've got 30 counties where they're at-will employees of the judge. So, those are the ones we've got these systemic problems where you don't have quality assessment, you don't have a chief overseeing it. You've got, in fact, we just had a public hearing on last week where one of the public defender board members from down south said, I've been on the board for 20 years, we have 10 part-time public defenders. I can tell you, nobody oversees quality. We meet four times a year, we're volunteer board members. That's just not a system that is set up to maintain high quality or even to monitor the cost effectiveness. We've got problems on the other end. We've got lawyers who are appointed case by case, for example, and they can run the meter without anybody, you know, calling them and say, you're not providing cost effective services. You're just, you know, you're billing for things that aren't being done, and nobody oversees that. So that's why we've got to redesign the system and say, if you're going to have a system of providing this kind of volume of services, you have to have quality control, and you have to have cost effectiveness control, and you have to have somebody monitoring so that you have consequences for providing bad representation. That's another flaw we have. There's no consequences, really, to anybody for providing really poor quality representation to an individual. There's malpractice is not an adequate remedy. There's really no discipline when there's an ineffective assistance to counsel. The courts aren't liable, the county's not liable, and the state's not liable. So you can get away with providing bad representation and nobody's accountable. That's a flawed system.
But back to your question about the stereotype, at least in Allen County and in the 30 plus years I've been here, we have had some of the best trial lawyers in the community on the public defender staff. And more than once, I know the judge and I have laughed when we see somebody hire private counsel that does not even compare to the quality of representation they will get from the assigned public defender, because we have folks that when people, you know, friends, family ask me, who would you recommend as an attorney, it's frequently somebody who's on the public defender staff that I would recommend. And if I was ever in trouble, that's who I'd go look for.
So Allen County is blessed?
They have some very good, competent, qualified lawyers, which, you know, makes me, when I hear the, sometimes on TV you say, the clients will say, you know, I don't want a public defender, I want to go hire
a real lawyer.
You know, and we say, you got the real deal. You know, you already got it. You just don't know it. So the public defenders get that rap as somehow they're second-rate lawyers. They're not second-rate lawyers. They might work in a second-rate system that impairs them from being highly effective, but it's not because they're hired and they're bad lawyers.
Tonight's episode of WBOI Presents will resume after a short break. Stay tuned.